Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to the Audio Time Capsule, episode 9. For those of you new to the show, I'm comedian Simon Kane, and this is the podcast where I bring on a guest, get them to leave 20 questions, and then a year later bring them back on to answer them. I then edit it so they are talking to their past self.
All past voices will sound like this.
And all future voices will sound like this. To give you a quick demonstration as to the format of the show, here is a question that I recorded for my future self before this guest arrived.
Hello, Simon. Are you still meditating once a day for a minimum of 5 minutes? Have you got that up? Is it to 10 minutes? Can you sit there and do absolutely nothing for 10 minutes? Tell me.
Well, honestly, right now, no. I haven't meditated for a while. I've been really busy, which is probably the best time to meditate. I just haven't. And I will again. I could, for a while, sit there for 15 minutes and do nothing and just be with no thoughts, which was really nice. But yeah, I can't right now, and it is annoying me, so thank you for bringing that up. I will start again. As soon as I've recorded this and put the pod together, while it's exporting, I will sit and meditate. Happy now? Is that going to make you feel better past me? Let's start the episode. This week, I am talking to British alternative comedian Jos Norris. He's an award-winning comedic actor and an award-nominated screenwriter. He is hilarious and always has some interesting projects on the go, and this podcast documents the last year of that. We talk about his personal life. Past him and present him talk about his personal life, about his projects that he's been working on over the last year, and pretty much everything in between. It was a really honest interview and a really open insight into his mind and his process, so I really had a lot of pleasure putting this together. I hope you enjoy it. If you're new here, please do remember to hit that subscribe button. If you're old here, please do consider giving us an honest review in iTunes, and either way, please do consider joining the Facebook group. It's called the Audio Time Capsule, and it's on Facebook, obviously. But for now, let's open the Audio Time Capsule of Jos Norris. Before I open Jos's time capsule, he has asked me to add in a little aside note for him, but he's actually sent me it himself. So let me just play that to you now, and hopefully that'll give you a little bit more context for his episode. This is the only time we're going to do this. I'm not going to be letting every person put in a little footnote into every episode if they're not quite comfortable with it. I sort of give them that option the year when they're making their questions rather than sort of following up as the way this one is. But Jos is a good friend, and I know how anxious he was about putting out his episode based on his own opinion on how it came out. So this is a little note from Jos about that.
Hello. This is Jos Norris on the 5th of February 2018, and Simon has very kindly let me record this sort of adjunct to my podcast episode. I think adjunct is the right word. I'm recording it because I've listened back to my episode of Audio Time Capsule now, and I can't help but feel like I've slightly let Simon down in terms of not having as much fun with the idea as I could have, because at the time when I recorded my questions, that was in 2016, the podcast I was mostly aware of Simon's was the Ask the Industry podcast, which I'm sure a lot of you might have listened to. It's a very sort of in-depth look at the comedy industry with various comedy professionals. I sort of naively assumed that the audio time capsule was a kind of an expansion of that. But looking back on your career a year later, so I thought its main area of focus was on sort of comedy industry specifics. And a lot of my questions are very much about that. And since then, I've heard little snippets of other people's episodes. I heard a bit on Tony Law's where he just asks about training his dog, training up Wolfie for the year later, and suddenly felt very stupid and kind of realised, oh, there's so much breadth in this idea to do something so much more interesting than to say, how have your gigs been going this year, or how's your scripts? It felt a bit of a shame suddenly that I hadn't done anything broader or more mundane or more trivial or more anecdotal, because I think when you do look back on your year, a year on, it's usually the sort of the smaller, sillier things that leap out to you and feel the most significant, rather than, oh, I made this much professional progress this year or whatever. Nevertheless, these are the questions I ask myself. A lot of them are very much about doing comedy and the process of doing comedy, which means I can't help but feel like I end up being a little bit wrapped up in myself and a bit self-absorbed in my answers. But there are some other questions about other things that I think I give some interesting thoughts on, and it remains a great idea and a really fun concept to kind of talk back to your own ideas a year later and see how you did with them. So thank you so much to Simon for having me on. Thank you to him for letting me add this as a kind of an apology to anybody who listens and goes, this guy thinks a lot about comedy, doesn't he? Hopefully there'll be another where I come back on and ask myself more questions about what toothpaste I'm using and whether I'm still eating beans on toast, because I'm eating too much of it at the moment, and I must sort it out, actually. Anyway, enjoy, and thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Jos Norris. Today's date is Tuesday the 16th of August 2016. I am currently sat in a vacant room in Suite Venues in Edinburgh with Simon that they're letting us use before a show comes in. I am feeling... I'm feeling great today, actually. I've had a coffee, I've had a bacon and sausage roll. Yesterday was my day off from the Fringe, so I feel very refreshed, and I'm enjoying my run, so I'm having a lovely time. I am excited about doing this project because I've often toyed with the idea of writing letters to yourself in the future and never got around to it because I am lazy. So the idea of actually trying to communicate directly with future self is an interesting one, and I'm keen to know what you're thinking.
Hi, my name is Jos Norris. It is the 16th of August, 2017. I am in Sweet Grass Market, which is a venue here at the Edinburgh Fringe. And I'm about to have a conversation with myself from last year and answer the questions that I had about my future. I'm feeling mostly just... I've genuinely forgotten what most of them are, so... Mostly I'm just feeling quite curious to know what were my top priorities a year ago, and then to try and dissect how well I managed to fulfill whatever I imagined might happen. So I'm excited and curious.
Question one. In 2015 to 16, you promised yourself that you would stop asking for gigs, with the exception of festival appearances and previews, and only perform when you were asked to. Luckily, that didn't result in too big a drop in the amount of time you were gigging, but over the years since then, have you kept that promise? If you have you continued to perform regularly, or has the number of gigs gradually dropped? If it has dropped, have you replaced it with other creative projects, or have you simply started asking for gigs again?
This is interesting that I asked this, because I've been thinking about this a lot in the last week specifically. I kept doing that promise to myself for about, I think, till around New Year this year. So I carried on only performing when people asked me to perform. And then the main reason for doing it was I just felt when I was at a gig and I knew that I was there because the person running it wanted me to be there and had gone out of their way to say, I would like you at this gig, please come and do it. It just removed a huge part of the kind of imposter syndrome thing you get when you're at a gig and you've asked to be at the gig, where you're like, oh, I hope I impress the people at this gig. I hope they're okay with me being here and with me asking for a spot and all that kind of thing. I found whenever I was in that sort of situation at a gig, it just made me a bit worse, because you've got that bit of your head that's going, I really need to impress these people. So that's why I did it, was it just improved my attitude to gigging completely. And then around the new year, I sort of lapsed in that, and I suddenly realized, much as it was good for my own headspace to only be performing at gigs where people wanted me, like actively had gone out their way to get me for it, I kind of thought, there must be, though, this whole sort of world of gigs that I'm just cutting myself off from, and there must be audiences that I'm cutting myself off from by choosing to not ask for gigs. So I started doing it again, and I started writing to people and saying, I've been off doing other things for a bit, but if you've got any spots, then that'd be lovely. So the sort of number of gigs increased for a while, and some of them were lovely, and some of them were terrible. Some of them were really... I had actually my worst gig I've ever had this year. I've never played to 20 minutes of actual silence before, and that happened this year, and was horrid. And it was one of those things where at the end you do that thing of going, oh, you've all been very patient and nice, and I've been here, and thanks for putting up with it. And you try and do that thing of acknowledging it at the end in the hope that everybody goes, oh, well, at least he knows it's been a bit rubbish. We'll let him off. And at this one I said, you've been very patient and I've been here. And they all just sort of nodded like that and looked very stern at me, like they were going, yeah, we have. We've been really patient. So some gigs were really lovely and some were terrible. And specifically in the last week or so, I've come back to this question of, like, do I want to gig that much? And my current feeling about it, I think, is that I might stop gigging for a while completely, or just try and remove live comedy as a thing where my brain goes. I don't know how long that will last, because it's the same as last year. I told myself I wouldn't ask for gigs for a while, and then that broke. And then this year, I'm thinking I might try and work on completely different things for a while, because I'm really enjoying my Fringe show this year, and I enjoy the fact that it seems to sit somewhere between comedy and something else. I'm not quite sure what, but I find that the things I find most interesting about the show aren't necessarily the jokes or the routines, but they're the sort of the conceptual elements to it and the way I'm trying to express ideas in it. And essentially, a lot of people have been trying to get me to work on a theatre thing this year. There's been some theatre people have said they'd like me to write a more sort of narrative theatre thing, and I'm trying to work on a lot more scripted stuff. And I think at the moment, my brain's just gradually shifting away from stand-up as being a place where it's going to do things. And I think on some level, that's always been what I'm trying to do, really, is to try and make something more in that mold, in a sort of scripted narrative conceptual world, than to try and be a gigging stand-up. It's just never been something I'm very... Not something I'm not very good at, but it's never been the... It's always a means to an end, I think, for me, gigging. I sort of view gigging as a place to go and express ideas and explore ideas with a view towards getting a show together for The Fringe. But I never get a huge kick out of gigging by itself. I always feel like this is me getting ready for next year's show. So it's not a way of paying the rent for me. And the idea of that, of like gigging to have to pay the rent, just makes me feel dread. It's a really horrible idea of having to rely on it. So I think at the moment I might cut off gigging completely for a few months just to work on other things, and then go back to it maybe next year, see how I feel, see where my brain goes. But I stopped with my not asking for gigs thing for a while, and then came up with a new plan. That's where I'm at the moment, I think.
Question two. What's the circle of other comics and creatives that you collaborate most regularly with these days, and how substantially has it changed this year?
Not at all, really. It's kind of, you always kind of add new people to your circle every year, or, you know, new people get drawn in, but I don't think there's ever a situation actually where suddenly you just completely change who it is you're working with. So mostly I've been working with Weirdos again, so that's the same sort of collective of people that I've been doing stuff with for a few years. I've been writing some things with different people, and sort of trying to focus more on some sort of scripted stuff with other sort of producers and things. So in that sense, I've been working a bit more with behind-the-scenes people this year, and slightly less on with the same group of people working on live shows, like Weirdos shows or whatever. But in general, this kind of the group of comedians that I see is still the same people. The people that I see sort of day by day and that we talk about ideas and share ideas with is the same that it's always been. So it's Weirdos and people like Adam Larter, John Kearns, Eleanor Morton. They're all keeping on, still doing excellent work, and I'm still having a lovely time with them all.
Question three. Of the various scripted projects that you've got in development in a couple of places, which, for the benefit of your own memory, if you've forgotten, includes at the moment Deathbed and The Girl Whisperer and that one about your dad on the river, how many of those have progressed meaningfully? Have any of them come to fruition, or have any been abandoned altogether? How many have not changed in any meaningful way in the year?
All three of those are now basically not happening. New ones have come up since that now might be happening. It's this Luke McQueen talks in his show about this year about what a weird thing it is to always have part of your brain in like the TV development world, because he says it takes about a year and a half to get a no, basically. So you're working on this idea and you invest so much time in it for a year and a half of your life, and then you get to the end of it and you're thinking, they might say yes, and that would completely change how I work, because then I'd have this big project to work on, it would be quite a big thing. Or you get a no and you go, great, well, that was a year and a half of my life that didn't really go anywhere. But so those three, The Girl Whisperer was the web series that I made last year, 2 years ago. Oh, there were two series, so last year and 2 years ago. And that's kind of gone quiet. We made the two series and I really liked them. And I think so the second series in particular felt very much exactly like the kind of thing I've always wanted to write. And it felt quite sweet and quite gentle and quite nice. It's not really gone anywhere because I think we just didn't have a plan. It was such a sort of formulaic idea of like, here's a guy who's not very good with girls. He's going to try and improve himself. And by the time you've done 9 episodes of that, you just go, there's not much we can do with that. So that exists on the internet and it's a really lovely thing and I'm very proud of it. But that's sort of where that is. Deathbed was a sitcom that I was working on about my granddad, who died a couple of years ago. And that one, it's this weird thing where you sort of go back and forth between producers, and everybody knows when you have a script that is great and is ready, and everyone knows when you have a script that's not quite ready, that is sort of good but isn't there yet. And nobody really knows how you get from one to the other, I think. Everybody's sort of guessing. Both on producer side and from a writer's perspective, you kind of go, I don't know what this needs to click. But it does mean that you have all these back and forths where I went in a lot with that script and they went, okay, what if you try this? Completely change it, do it like this. And you go away and change it. And then they come back and go, oh no, it was much better the way before. Make it back how it was before. And then you take it back to where it was, but you try and improve it. And then they go, nah, it's still not working. You need to do it completely differently again. And it's basically everyone's kind of throwing ideas out in the hope that it transforms and becomes the thing it needs to be. And we never really worked out what the thing was that it needed. So that one kind of went back on the shelf. What was the other one? Oh, the one about me and my dad walking down a river is something that I'm still talking to people about, which hopefully we'll get somewhere. A new one cropped up this year, which was a sitcom about social anxiety and technology addiction that I was working on with Watt Larks, who are great. They're absolutely brilliant bunch of producers. And I loved that. It was. They really kind of pushed it to be the best thing I've written and the best thing I've worked on. And that got very close to happening. And then some people at Channel 4 realised it was more or less identical to a pilot they just commissioned. They went, oh, we've already got something about exactly the same thing. We can't make this. So this is the thing with TV, like I was saying with Luke McQueen, you spend a long period of time working on things and really investing a lot, and then you get to the point where you go, ah, didn't happen. And it feels like a shame, except that in that year and a half, you've built really good relationships with people who really like your work. So there's now, I've been working with these producers on these things for the last year or so, and there are people out there who've read it and liked it and kind of championed it up to a certain point, and then went, we can't take it any further than this. So I think much as a year ago, maybe my past self is wondering whether anything's going to take off and get made in the next year. Much as you'd feel like that's a disappointing thing that it hasn't, you just go, this is all a very long process of building your sense of what it is you want to write and finding people who sort of also want to make similar things. So they're still all ticking away, those sort of scripted projects. But as yet, we're still working out what is the one that hopefully will get people to go, oh, this is great. So we'll get there with it. But I'm sorry to let you down. I'm sorry they're not out yet.
Question 4. Are you going back to the Edinburgh Fringe this year? When you wrote this question, you were thinking about only coming back for a short run and possibly coming with something different to a usual solo show in order to use the year to focus on different things. Has this been the case, or have you come back with a full show?
I always say this. I always say I'm going to come back with something that's not quite a comedy show or a stand-up show. It's going to be a bit different and more sort of conceptual or whatever. Because it's like that thing I said about, like, I never think of stand up as being the form that I ultimately want to aspire to. I'd like to be somebody who sort of makes theatre shows and makes scripted things and films and TV scripts or whatever. So whenever I think about making a show, I'm always like, it can't just be a stand-up show. It has to be something more than that, which means I end up just endlessly sort of creating convoluted ways to make things more complicated than they need to be. So this year's show, I have come back and I'm doing the full month just because I like it a lot. It's always a bit too long. And every time I'm up here, I always get to that last week and go, oh, it's hard actually to do 3 weeks of the same, saying the same words every day. But it's just such a lovely place to be and everybody's involved in it and everybody goes through the same emotions of, oh, I'm tired and this is long. But you feel so proud of what you're doing and it's so exciting to share it with loads of people every day that it's just worth it. It's worth the sort of the slog of doing a month of quite stressful work in return for the sort of the fulfillment you get from audiences and from your friends coming to see it and sort of peers and that sort of thing. So this year's show, like I say, I've again just tied myself in knots trying to make something that feels interesting to me because I struggle with just standing and talking. So this year I build a giant web out of string. And then I try and do a stand-up show in the middle of a web, and then at the end try and escape from it, which I think is a sort of a convoluted metaphor for something. I'm not sure what, possibly an anxiety thing. And it's been lovely. It's been really, really nice. I think it's my best show, which I think would have surprised me this time last year, because I think I was so happy with last year's show, I kind of thought, I think I'm going to need to give myself a bit of time off for a while because I really liked what I'd done last year and I thought maybe I'll need to go away and really work on what I want to do next. But I think I have come back with something that I prefer and I think is more interesting and people have been very nice about it. It's all going all right. But yeah, again, I am forcing myself to try and think of it as being more complicated than it needs to be. I always end up doing that. Last year was I was stuck in a box for the first 10 minutes of the show. This year's I'm tying myself up with rope. I don't know why I feel the need to do it, but again, there's something in my head that goes, try and make it more theatrical, try and do something else with it, otherwise I sort of doubt myself when I'm stood on stage.
Question 5. What other festivals have you performed at this year? How many of the festivals you performed at last year did you go back to?
What have I done this year? I did Leicester again, which I love. Leicester is my favourite, and had a lovely time there. Really, really nice. I did Glasgow again, and again enjoyed it a lot, slightly less than last year because I was a bit further out of town, so it was a bit trickier to get people along. I did Bath again in the same venue. That was nice, not as nice as Leicester. What else did I do? Was that all this year? Oh, I did the Liverpool Comedy Festival last year, and I didn't know I had any sort of friends or fans or followers or whatever in Liverpool, so I went there expecting very little and ended up having a really lovely show. Not a huge one, but very nice. So sort of built a few little audiences in places like that. Was there anywhere I went to last year that I didn't go back to? I didn't go back to Belfast. I had a nice time in Belfast last year and didn't do it this year, but mainly because we were there through Comedian Cinema Club and that was all organised by the sort of management team who ran that, so I just didn't have the contact details really for that festival. But most of them I went back to, and they continue to be lovely. I didn't go back to Brighton because I really like Brighton. Brighton's a lovely place, and the audiences are lovely. I just think it's too expensive. I think I, personally, I know people who've had great times at Brighton Fringe and speak very highly of it. I think I paid like 150 quid or something to do two performances, and you kind of think, when in Edinburgh you're paying 300 quid to do a month of shows, it's very easy to make a return on that investment. When you go to Brighton and you've already spent that much just to do two shows, you kind of think, there's no way I can make that cost effective across two shows to make that back, as well as your travel and the costs of putting on a show and all that kind of thing. And maybe if I'd had a different experience and gone and just sold out two nights in a row and had huge, amazing crowds, I'd be feeling very differently and going, yeah, it's brilliant, it's fantastic. But I think I'd got a bit unlucky last year and went, I can't make that a cost manageable thing. So I didn't go back this year. But I like Brighton a lot and would like to go there more to do other things, but possibly outside of the fringe because it seems quite expensive to register for it. But that's just my take on it. All the others I went back to and had a lovely time. Didn't go back to Latitude. Forgot about that. Again, because the people who sort of sent me there last year weren't doing it this year, so didn't have an in. But I had a lovely time. Hopefully they'll have me back sometime.
Question 6. You're currently hoping to make more independent online film projects of your own in the wake of some of the stuff that you made this year. How much of that sort of thing have you been able to make?
Great question. I made three little short films this year, which was really nice. The first one was me and Matthew Heighton did our first short last year. It was a sort of a black comedy crime thing about a celebrity double act who try and kill each other for the insurance money, with Ed Axel and Michael Brunstrom in it. That was really fun. Me and Matt did a second film together, and again, he directs, I write. This one was about Robert Johnson, because I love the Robert Johnson myth. He was a sort of penniless blues guitarist in Tennessee, I think, who the myth is that he met the devil at a crossroads at midnight and sold his soul to become really good at guitar. So we made a film about a modern day equivalent of Robert Johnson, played by me, who meets the devil, played by David Mills, which was an incredible bit of casting. And that was Eleanor Wharton suggested casting him, and as soon as she said that, I went, oh, right, this film has just clicked into place, because David Mills is just wonderfully typecast as that kind of suave trickster character. And it's about a guy who sells his soul to the devil, but then finds out that actually all he's agreed to is that the devil is now going to be his guitar teacher for the next 3 years or whatever. So every week he has to go to the devil's house, and it's all quite underwhelming, and the devil lives in a terrible little bedsit. And he slowly learns guitar. I then did a sort of a weird horror film with Lucy Pearman, who's fantastic. And we came up with this game last year at the Fringe called Feed the Baby, where I played a baby and she just dropped mango chunks into my mouth, just because we were bored backstage during Adam Larter's show. Not bored because the show was bad, but because we were in it every day. So when you're in a show every day, you've got to entertain yourself backstage. So we just fed each other mango. And somehow that refrain of feed the baby kept coming back as something we wanted to work with. And we put together all these ideas of this weird gothic kind of nasty fairy tale, odd, visually strange Lynchian thing. And we weren't quite sure what we wanted it to be. We just knew it was about this terrified mum with this horrible baby that kept making demands of her, and she was just really stressed and sad. And we threw all these visuals down on paper of things we wanted it to look like. So we sort of referenced Nosferatu and things like that, and essentially had no idea how to make it, and went, we don't know what we're talking about here. And we got Sam Nicaresti and Lottie Bowater in, who are both really interesting sort of visual art director type people. They have Lottie did lighting and sound, Sam directed it, and they just have incredible eyes at how to make something look weird on a screen. And essentially, because there was no script, we just sort of mood boarded the whole thing. So it was a day of the four of us in a house trying to throw all these different elements together and make it look as weird as we can. And it's not finished in the edit yet, but I've seen a rough cut and it's just fascinating. Like, Sam's done an amazing job of making it look horrible and very funny. There's some really funny visuals in it and very strange. So that's coming out Halloween, hopefully. And I also did a documentary with Ed Axel, where Ed knew that he wanted to make a documentary about nothing. Or a documentary about two people trying to make a documentary and failing to work out what their documentary was about. And we spent a few months working on that and have put together this sort of 10-minute taster version of it, where the two of us wander around trying to find meaning in London suburbs, and are just consistently met with people who don't really know what we're up to. It's a very strange thing, and basically nothing happens for 10 minutes. It's just the two of us wandering around investigating something and not really getting anywhere. But I think the dynamic with the two of us is really nice, so we're hoping to try and make some more of that this year. So I've got to make three really lovely little things this year. There's a vague plan for another one that me and Matt are going to do, and me and Ed are going to try and do some more. And hopefully if this horror one goes well, then we might try and collaborate.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Right, on something else. We'd quite like to do something about the tallest man in the world, but we're not sure what. I've made some things I've really enjoyed this year, and some really weird feeling things. So hopefully they're the first of many more.
Question 7. What's the current state of play with the particular collaborative comedy collectives that you most frequently work with? So that would be Weirdos, Comedian Cinema Club, and ACMS.
Weirdos is all going very nicely. I think we're not doing the annual panto this year, because instead we're doing a show with Tony Law on ice, Alexandra Palace Ice Rink, in October, which is very soon, and I can't ice skate. So we're kind of up against it in terms of doing that. We need to start rehearsing it properly when we get back. It's called The Battle for Icetopia, and it's going to be loads of stupid comedians on ice skates. Tony Law is a genuinely good ice skater, so he's always wanted to do this show where he's on ice and he does this extravaganza. And apparently all promoters ever have said, that can't work, that can't happen. And then eventually somebody said, talk to Adam Larter, he'll be able to sort out a show on ice if anyone can. And now that's happening. So Weirdos plus Tony Law are doing this stupid thing in October. And we've been doing other little things with Weirdos. We made some little shorts last year, and we pop up and do little one-off gigs every now and again. It's become a collective that just does the odd stupid project every now and again. It's no longer like a regular monthly night or anything, or there's no sort of prescribed thing of what we have to do. But every now and again, Adam will go, here's what we're going to work on, and then we'll work on that for a bit. ACMS is great fun. I just have a lovely time at that. I try and go to it as often as I can in London, and it's just a great place to go and do an idea that might pop into your head once and then let it go. And they're just the loveliest audience there. You can go on stage and just sort of say one word and they'll just sort of love you for it. It's incredibly misleading as a performer to have an audience like that makes you think that every idea you have is genius. But they're really nice. It's just such a great place to sort of play with ideas. So I've been doing a lot there this Fringe as well. Cinema Club's been a bit weird this year. We've been doing very well with these sort of pop-up one-off shows. So there was something at the Royal Albert Hall, which did great. And I think Jurassic Park, I wasn't at that one, but Jurassic Park at Royal Albert Hall went very well. And we did something on the South Bank in the Underbelly. We did Aladdin, and I nearly smashed my jaw open because I played the magic carpet and did that by just putting a sleeping bag on my head and then danced round and then fell over and smashed my head against a metal step and nearly knocked out all my teeth. So I think we really scared quite a lot of people on the South Bank that day. So all those sorts of shows have been going great. We've also been trying to get a sort of a London residency off the ground, a sort of a monthly thing. And that one's been a bit weirder, a bit trickier to kind of sustain. We sort of tried it in a couple of different venues and we're not quite sure where our home is yet. So Cinema Club's sort of currently without a home, which is kind of fine because it seems to be having this audience at these pop-ups. Maybe it'll become the show that turns up at festivals or at one-off things like that and plays to its audience there. And the residency thing might not come off. I'm not sure, but I always have a lovely time with it, with all of them. They're great fun.
Question 8: what have been the biggest developments in the careers of your closest allies and friends in comedy and the arts this year?
Ooh, that's a nice question. I was worried that all my questions are just me asking myself about myself. So it's nice to think that I briefly thought about other people last year. That's always encouraging. And what has happened to friends of mine this year? Everyone's just sort of settled into their groove by now, I think. Because I think, you know, everybody now knows what they're doing. They know what they're good at. So people like, I guess Eleanor's the one that I work most closely with because I see her all the time. And so we talk a lot about what's going on. She's doing a show that's doing very well over at The Stand. She's having a lovely time and has been writing some really funny scripts this year. She wrote an excellent script about pirates, about Mary Bonnie and Anne Reed, or possibly Anne Bonnie and Mary Reed. I forget. The lady pirates who dressed up as men to try and get away with being pirates. So she's been writing some great stuff like that. What's everybody else been up to? John Kearns is back at the Fringe after a couple of years away. He did a wonderful Christmas show last year at Bassey Arts Centre, which I think was him kind of testing the waters to see if he could do another hour show, because he took a bit of time off from doing that after he won the award, and it was wonderful. It was such a beautiful show. So he's now back at the Fringe doing stuff every day again. Adam Larter is here again doing a show, a sort of art prop show called L'Art Nouveau, which I pop up in, and he's running this Weirdos on Ice show as well. What else is everybody up to? Harriet Kemsley, who was in The Girl Whisperer last year. She was the sort of the other main star of that web series. She's currently in a sitcom that's going out on Viceland every week about her and Bobby Mayer getting married. And it's a sort of real-life, reality-structured narrative sitcom. So her actual family are in it, and they're planning a real-life wedding, but it's all sort of scripted along certain lines, which I've not watched yet because it's been going out during The Fringe, so I've just been a bit too hectic to catch up on it. But I've heard great things about it, and that's very exciting. I was going to be in it, but my scene's been cut because apparently the sound didn't work, so that's a shame. But everybody's had a great year, I think, either just sort of continuing on with what they already were great at, or kind of taking that step up and kind of making stuff for TV. But everyone's having a great time.
Question 9. What's the state of play with your flat? At the moment, in 2016, you're a bit worried that your landlady might increase the rent next year and that maybe that would mean you'd have to move. Any update on this?
I'm staying. I was very worried about this. And I'm constantly... The thing is, I've been in this flat now for 5 years. I've been in the same London flat share for 5 years and the rent's never gone up, which is a mad fortunate position to be in. So I think whenever I know that there's a lease change coming, my brain very much panics about it and goes, you might have to look for somewhere, because the idea of just looking for somewhere in London is so horrible, and I've not had to do it for 5 years, and I will have to eventually. I think I've just accidentally stumbled upon one of the few pleasant, scrupulous landlords in London. She's just quite happy to have us. So we're all back. Anna's leaving, which we're all very sad about. She's moving to Bristol. But I do actually know a couple of people in Bristol. I must hook her up so she has friends, because she's worried she won't know anybody. So she's leaving. We have Anna's boyfriend, Jamie, is moving in, which is great because he already knows all the house songs. We have a whole bunch of songs. There's one about a big lunch, and there's a great one about Jeffrey Tambor getting into a frothy bath. He already knows all these, so we won't need to kind of catch up with anything. And we're staying for at least another year, I think. So you can rest easy.
Question 10. What's your relationship with your non-comedy friends like at the moment? Because this year, 2016, you've started to feel it's a bit harder to keep in touch with them as much as you'd like because of the difficulty balancing comedy and non-comedy. Has that improved or declined at all, or stayed the same?
It's kind of stayed the same. It is hard. It is difficult because your schedule is just opposite to everybody's. Like, you're free in the weekday daytimes. I also do children's entertainment stuff, which I do sometimes during the weekdays. But most of the time, I'm free Monday to Friday during the days, and then busy at weekends, either gigging or doing rehearsals for shows or whatever. And then busy in the evenings with gigs. So it's just, you do have this little disconnect with your friends sometimes where people will suggest things and you go, oh, I can't do that. And everyone goes, oh, you can never do anything. And I always feel very aware of it. And I just try very hard to remember when I do have those moments of free time to go, try and use this to actually see the other people that you care about and not to just get wrapped up in yourself. So it's the same as it is, really. I sort of try very hard to see people when I can. I've been doing lots of Dungeons and Dragons this year. That's been a great saving grace, actually, because there's a particular group of friends. My friend Ferrica, for his birthday last year or maybe the year before, said I'd like to set up a Dungeons and Dragons crew because I've always wanted to be a dungeon master. And we did it thinking it would be maybe a one-off thing or something. We did it a couple of times. We just really enjoy it. So now every couple of months we meet up and do that. And it's nice to have a sort of a regular thing besides comedy that you go, I'm just going to go and see these people now and do this stupid thing. And it's nice for it to be silly as well, because I think if you get too stuck into the idea that the only way you can do something silly is by doing a comedy show with your comedy friends, then you lose touch with the fact that, like, there's so much stupid things to be done just in your everyday life. So I'm now a dragonborn barbarian, and I can breathe red lightning, and we go around and just sort of what are we doing at the moment? We've got to find this hag, kill some hag. I see them every couple of months for that, and that's all very nice. So yeah, it's fine. It's a difficult thing to balance, and I hope maybe that if I am going to try and work more on theatre stuff and scripted stuff and cut back a bit on the gigs, then that's something I can try and improve more, is to be more available for my friends, because I've been less good at that than I could be the last couple of years. So maybe that'll change a bit this year. But I'm still doing my best to just be around for them when I can.
Question 11. How are things going with Eleanor?
That's a lovely question, and you sound very happy to be asking it. Very nice, very good. We're having a lovely time. We're living together this fringe, which we've never done before. The longest we've ever been together before is a week on holiday, when we go on holiday. We obviously are together for that whole time. But generally, we'll see each other like a few times during the week, but not sort of stay together for weeks at a time. So that's been an interesting sort of test of things, and we're having a very nice time overall. I forgot to wash up yesterday, so I got in trouble for that. But, you know, more fool me, put more effort into looking after the house. And generally, we're having a very nice time. We see each other's family and all that kind of thing. They came to see my show yesterday. I try and pop up to Edinburgh when I can. We try and remember to do lots of things together that aren't just comedy related. Although it's difficult, you know, when you're going out and you are both comedians, pretty much most of what you talk about is, here's an idea I had, or like, can you believe this stupid thing that happened to so-and-so or whatever. But we try and remember to go and do other things and to sort of experience London. Because obviously she's from Edinburgh and lives in London to do comedy. Because Edinburgh is so nice, she often sort of gets a bit cross and goes, oh, I wish I was back in Edinburgh where everything was lovely. So I have to sort of try and make the extra effort to think of things about London that are great and take her to those places and go, look, this is pretty good. And she goes, yeah, it's not as good as Edinburgh though, is it? And she's completely right. But we have a nice time trying to sort of discover London together and find the hidden bits of it that you don't always remember to visit. There's a fly in here. I've killed it.
Question 12. What's your take on current affairs? At the moment, it feels a bit like we're on the brink of a sort of geopolitical collapse. So has this got better or worse? And do you have any major thoughts on it?
Wow. Well, I asked that before the current sort of... Oh, no, Brexit would have happened. So I'm aware of that when I asked that question. Yeah, that's got much worse. Donald Trump is the president now. And I don't know. It's hard to have a take on current affairs because people are already saying things about it more intelligently than I could. So generally, you just sort of feel a bit kind of helpless, and you're like, I can't really comment on it because I don't have the wit or the intelligence for that, or the nuance to take on it. So you just sort of generally feel a lot of despair. I do feel like when Trump got in, there were a lot of people who were going, oh, a Trump presidency will cause nuclear war and there'll be Nazi rallies all over America and that kind of thing. And at the time, I was trying to be quite optimistic about it. And I was like, I reckon all that will happen is he'll just be rubbish. He will just be a rubbish president for a few years and he'll cause a bit of a mess and he will embarrass America and then he'll be gone. And now, 6 months on, we do seem to be on the brink of a nuclear war and there are Nazi rallies across America. So I kind of go, yeah, this is not panning out brilliantly. This is looking pretty bad. But there is so little you can do other than to try and, I don't know, I ought to do more activism, I realise, because it feels like if ever there's a time, in general, everybody's attitude is like, oh, I ought to do more activism. And I think I've felt like that even at times of relative stability. So if I feel like that then I really ought to be joining in and doing something now. So I need to try and join up with more stuff like that. But beyond that, you've just got to try and keep creating work that I think you feel says something important for you, whatever that is, and you've got to try and do that with some positivity and some sort of energy and hope that somewhere out there that puts a smile on people's faces. Because that's the thing, when there's so much terrible stuff going on, it really makes you doubt the point of what you're doing when your job is to be stupid in front of people and you kind of think, what is this doing? And you've got to hope that maybe you create a little bit of sort of lightness in other people's lives when generally they feel quite sort of sad about everything. So yeah, it's pretty terrible at the moment, I'm afraid. I'm afraid it's got much worse. Maybe I asked that last year hoping, I'm sure we'll have been able to minimise some of the damage of Brexit and all that kind of thing by this time next year. Nah, it's got worse. But maybe it'll get better.
Question 13. One of your plans this year is to try and work a little bit more within the context of TV comedy as opposed to live stuff and to write more things. Has there been any interesting developments there this year? Have there been any great shows being made? And is there anything you'd like to say about that?
I think I sort of covered that already. I think that's probably been all I could say about that has probably been facts in my answers to the other ones. So like I said, this other sitcom came out that I worked on with What Larks, which was really lovely. They saw some of my other work and went, we like this, let's work on a thing. And we've taken it to a certain point and now we're thinking of other things we can work together. So I've been doing that. And in terms of other things being made, I guess, again, that would come back to Harriet and Bobby's sitcom, which is really exciting. That's kind of the first time some friends of mine have got their own TV show. You know, I've known people who are in shows and people who I don't know so well who write shows. But I think that's the first time somebody I consider a good friend has actually been able to get their own show off the ground. So that's probably been the biggest TV development in terms of my friends. And it's all really nice. It's really encouraging to think that there are new ideas being made. And Viceland in particular actually have been really good this year at commissioning interesting new things. They did that Brexit stand-up show of comedians going around Europe doing stand-up about Brexit in different European countries. So they seem to be making interesting stuff. There's a lot of good stuff being made, and it starts to feel now like those ideas are coming from the sort of the newer, interesting names and not always being sort of the same figures that you see on TV all the time. So I think people are starting to get their breaks in TV, which is really exciting. And like I say, some people now are sort of interested in my work, and while they're not yet at the point of like, we want to make your show, it's nice to feel like those opportunities are arising and are being given to people of that level. So hopefully that means over the next few years I'll get to do more of that kind of thing. But yeah, I think most of that is stuff I've mentioned already.
Question 14. You'd like to do more travelling and see more interesting places. Have you managed it?
I went to Whitby this year for my holiday. Me and Eleanor went to Whitby. So no, I guess I haven't really managed to. I think I want to do more travelling around Europe, and I want to go to South America, and I want to go to Moscow, and I'd like to go to New Zealand and probably bits of Africa. Just everywhere. I haven't really been anywhere. Oh, and I want to drive across America, but I can't drive. So I haven't done any of those things. But it's just tricky finding the time and the money. And particularly when you're a couple and you're both self-employed and you're both in the arts, very difficult to both have the right amount of money at the same time. That's the thing, is you kind of, one of you will have saved up enough for a holiday, but then the other one might be sort of having to fill in with loads of other jobs, and then it'll get to another time in the year, and then the other person's got enough for a holiday, and then you're really struggling and like, oh, I can't pay my rent this month. So it is very difficult to find time to do an exotic holiday together, which is why we try and go to towns in Britain that are near national parks. So we did Windermere last year, and we did Whitby this year. I think that should be a thing I try and do this year, is maybe we try and find a time and we both try and save up for it and do a proper holiday to, I'd like to do Eastern Europe, like Romania, Bulgaria, that kind of thing, and then gradually build up to the South America and all the slightly more more ambitious ones. So yeah, I haven't been able to go anywhere tremendously exciting this year, but I'll get there. I'll figure it out.
Question 15. Did you do anything this year that you'd never done before?
Oh. Did I? Oh, I was my brother's best man this year. I was very moved when that happened, because I wasn't really sure. He's got this best friend from school called Matt Ward, and I kind of knew it'd be either me or him that'd be best man, and it would just come down to an arbitrary decision of, do I want a friend best man or a family best man? You can have either, and people seem to choose either way, and I wouldn't have minded. And then he wrote it in my Christmas present. He bought me a book for Christmas and then wrote, do you want to be my best man in the thing? And I was very overwhelmed by it. It was really lovely. And just had a really nice wedding. It is a job, I realise, being best man. It turns out, I think in popular culture, people's imaginations, it's just an honour to be the best man. And it is an honour. But you do also get to the day and be like, oh, I have to actually run all this stuff. So you end up trying to find everybody for the photos, and then you do a lot of tidying and a lot of setting up and all that kind of thing. But it's just an absolute pleasure to do it when it's when what you're doing is you're helping your brother have the sort of biggest day of his life. And I got to write a speech, and I was banned from doing any of the things I wanted to do in the speech. I had to do a sort of a fake version of the speech at an ACMS just to get them out of my system. There was a lot of nonsense I wanted to do that was sort of satirizing the idea of best man speeches, because I think they're a bit stupid. And my brother said, don't do that. Just do a nice speech with some sincerity for once and just say some nice things. And I did that, and it was really lovely, and it was such a pleasure to see them have such a lovely day. That's probably the biggest new thing this year, I think. And it was great. It was really nice.
Question 16. How's your health? Because you're always trying to work on your health. Just generally, I sort of constantly tell myself I'm on a health kick and trying to eat better and sleep better and exercise more. So I'm just wondering whether in the next year I'm going to... Because I always say that and then never really do anything about it. So I wonder whether maybe knowing that I've logged a question will make me work harder this year to try and do stuff.
You leaned away from the microphone when you asked that. What terrible mic technique I had a year ago. I completely forgot that I'd asked that question. So I've not made a conscious effort to improve my health. I have lost a lot of weight in the last 2 weeks because it's the Edinburgh Fringe, and you just shed weight despite eating rubbish. I end up coming back about half a stone lighter every time, even though I've just eaten chips for a month. But it's because you're always walking and you're always stressed. I find stress is a great health aid. I mean, it's terrible for you, but if your sole goal health-wise is lose weight, stress is incredible, and it's just a shame it causes so many other health problems. It's all right, my health. I walk a lot. I got a Fitbit last year, and I walk a good 10 miles a day at least. That's just a normal day. It's 10 miles. So I'm doing all right with that. I need to swim more, and I need to do more actual exercise because I think I'm getting to the age where my body stops looking after itself. So quite soon, at the moment, I can eat a load of rubbish and kind of come out the other end sort of fine. And before long, my body will go, no, I'm not enjoying this. And I'm going to make you look awful as a result of the fact that you've chosen to do this. So, yeah, I ought to start setting up a proper exercise regime and eating better. I went through a week of eating only salads in like June. That was good. And then I went, oh, I miss crisps. And then I ate a lot of crisps. So, yeah, I'll get around to it. But it's not urgent. I think it'll be urgent in about 3 years. 3 or 4 years, then I'll start looking old.
Looking back over this last year, 2016 to 17, what has been your favourite memory from that year?
Ooh, that's a nice one. I think it might be the wedding, my brother's wedding, because it seems to combine all the things that could be nice memories, in that when you work in as a performer, part of you goes, surely my best memory would be the best performance I gave. But then you do get to go do a performance when you're a wrestler. You get to do a speech, and everyone was really lovely about the speech. And also you go, my best memory has to be something to do with family or friends or whatever, and that's all involved in the wedding. And the food was lovely, so that's, you know, and you're just in a pretty place looking at nice things all day. So in terms of an event that brought together all the elements that might make a lovely memory, I guess that would be the one. Because it's not every day that your brother gets married and you get to watch that. So I think that's certainly the one that stands out most as that was a one-off thing that won't happen again, that it was a real joy to be a part of. So I think the wedding.
If you could go back to today, the 16th of August 2016, are there any questions that you wish you'd asked now that the year's gone by that you didn't anticipate?
I don't know if there are, you know. I feel like nothing's really sort of taken me by surprise this year. Like I said, the big thing is the political things. Those are the big things that have really kind of thrown all of us, I think, and made us go, oh God, what the hell is going on? And I kind of don't wish I'd asked about that because I already sort of did. And to be any more specific about it than I was would probably just have made me sad. So no, I think I thought of most of the places where my brain went over the year, and I think by and large I'm quite pleased with how they've all panned out.
And if you could go back to today, the 16th of August 2016, and give yourself one piece of advice, what would it be?
I think just remember not to get too obsessed with what everybody else thinks. I think I realised this year, and it was going to be a big part of my show, and it didn't quite make it in, nobody is thinking about you as much as you are. That's true of everybody, obviously, because why would anybody think about somebody else more than themselves? So, you know, a lot of, and this is true both of performers and of everybody in general, I think a lot of kind of anxiety and self-doubt comes from the idea of, like, you must always make sure that to other people they can see that what you're doing is worthwhile and important and that you're having a good time doing it. But actually nobody's looking around at other people and being like, oh, I wonder if they're having a good time and whether what they're doing is worthwhile and valuable. Really, like, nobody cares. The main thing is that you find that value in yourself. And I think you feel that more keenly when you're a performer because you're constantly putting yourself out there sort of begging for this sort of validation. But I think it's true of everybody. Just remember that the main judge of whether what you do is fulfilling and enjoyable and good and worthwhile is yourself. So you just got to try and always play to that and never worry too much about anybody else. Not to the extent that you're upsetting people. Don't go around upsetting other people. But just make sure that you're mostly doing what you want to do and not worrying too much about what people think.
That was Jos. I loved hearing and massively related to the problem of wanting to see your non-comedy friends but not having the right schedule to do that. It's a constant bugbear of mine that I don't see people I don't know within comedy enough. And arguably, I don't see the people I know in comedy enough. So it was lovely to hear other people struggle with that as well, as weird as that sounds. I also really know the frustration of wanting your show to be bigger than just standing and talking. I have increasingly found that frustrating, especially in the last 8 or 9 months, and wanted to do more with the medium of stand-up. I know Joz is moving more into a different area of that and being more theatrical in his approach, which I find really fascinating to watch. For me, it's just, I know stand-up can be anything, so I want to do more with that. I don't want to just feel hamstrung by the idea of standing there. I mean, there's nothing wrong with just standing there and telling jokes. Absolutely, I loved doing that for ages, but now I don't know, I'm trying to find a way of expressing ideas and thoughts in a more out there makes it sound too grand, but just in a different way, and it's great to see someone else doing that as well. Please don't forget, if you're new here, please do hit that subscribe button. If you're old here, please do remember to give us an honest review in iTunes, ideally positive, ideally 5 stars. We're doing really well on those at the moment. So far, 14 reviews. Can we get it up? Can it be higher? If you don't mind, please take a minute and do that. It really helps out the show. I can't express the number of ways that it really helps out the show. It's giving us a social boost and potentially leading to much bigger guests. So please take a minute and do that review. I know not everyone wants to be on iTunes or make an account. So if you don't want to do that, I totally understand. Just remember to subscribe and share this with someone who you think will get some value out of it. Each week in the outro, I pick one question that the guest gave and I ask it to you, and I find out where you're at in your life and your career. This one, I want to ask you, what's the one thing in your career that you've done to make yourself get more comfortable in your job or your place of work? I loved how Joz stopped asking for gigs and waited for people to invite him so he knew that he was wanted at the places he was performing. And although I couldn't see myself doing that myself, I do admire that he had the balls to do that, because that wouldn't be suicide for my career, but it would be a massive blow towards what I'm doing. So yeah, what have you done recently to make your working environment more comfortable for you? Could be redesigning your desk, it could be buying something new, it could be making a concession to feng shui your paperclips. I don't know, but write it in the Facebook group and we'll all see how we're making our lives slightly more comfortable. The Audio Time Capsule is a Fruit That Got in Gravity's Way production for the internet. All elements were created by me, comedian Simon Kane, except the music that was composed and recorded by David Jordan. Thank you very much for listening, thank you very much for subscribing, and thank you very much for rating and donating if you do. I'll see you all in about 14 days' time. Bye!
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.